This is The Drive with Dale Lally and Matt Williamson on your 24-7 home of the black and gold. SNR. Steelers Nation Radio.
Welcome to The Drive. I'm Dale Lally here with Matt Williamson. It's a Wednesday. The Steelers had their first practice today as they prepare to play the Browns on Sunday. The Browns cannot practice today because their facility is closed, although they didn't have any new tests today. Of course, Kevin Stefanski, their head coach, not coaching. We talked a lot about that yesterday. Of course, our ongoing coverage here on Steelers Nation Radio of the Steelers playoff run is brought to you by Ford and FedEx. And, Matt, the Steelers injury report today, somewhat promising. Or I guess you could say I guess you could say it's promising. Chris Boswell was limited with that groin injury. Your place kicker, whether he...
Yeah, that's a hard one to judge. What's limited, what's what percentage, all those things.
Terrell Edmonds was back as a full participant. Steven Nelson with a knee was limited. Tyson Alualu with an ankle did not practice. Vince Williams with a quad did not practice. But all those guys are expected to play.
Yeah, right. I don't think nothing really came out of the Week 17 game detrimental to the health, right?
The typical, as Mike Tomlin likes to say, bumps and bruises associated with play.
And those are a lot worse than probably the most, a lot of our listeners even realize. I mean, some of these guys... They look pretty beat up.
Yeah, but by Friday, they're back out there. You know, I did
make a list.
We had an opportunity to talk to David DeCastro this afternoon, and I said, Dave, are you, you were dealing with some stuff earlier in the season. Mm-hmm. Are you over all that stuff? Are you feeling good about right now? I said, or would you have appreciated the week off? Last week.
Yeah, right.
He said, yeah, we're all dealing with something here, but you can't get fired up to play in the playoffs, I don't know what you're doing here.
Sure. So, I always find that interesting, too, because I've been on the other side, and I've been in organizations, and some of the dudes, you see him on Monday or Tuesday and think, there's no way he's going to play.
Oh, Jerome Bettis was just...
Yeah, you said that a lot,
You'd see him after a game, and he struggled to put his shirt on.
Really?
You look at it, he'd be sitting on his chair, and he always wore a button-down shirt to the game, struggling to raise his arm up to get his arm in the sleeve, and you're looking at his back, and it's got welts all over.
All these helmet marks.
Like somebody beat him with a baseball bat, you know?
And
he would talk about it. He said, he didn't feel human again until Tuesday or Wednesday.
It's crazy. And speaking of DeCastro, I don't have any worry about him going forward, next year. I think it's going to come out that he had something for a lot of the year because he really wasn't himself. I thought he played well in Week 17.
Yeah, I think as you get closer to the playoffs, as you get into the playoffs, the juices start flowing a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about it, during the season, how weird this season was.
We talked
to him a few weeks ago, and he's like, it's tough to get up for these games as you typically would. There's no, you run out into the stadium and there's nobody there, and it's, it kind of tests your mettle a little bit.
I bet everyone handles it differently.
What
I mean? Yeah, some are fine with it, no different, and some of them probably didn't have their best year because of it.
Think a lot of times, especially in football, it's an emotional game that you see the defense feeding off the crowd energy and the crowd mm-hmm. noise. You see the offense kind of doing this. It's different,
Yeah, I even more than coming out of the tunnel, I was thinking – fourth quarter, game on the line at home, the whole place is terrible towels galore and it's loud and, or pass rush help because they can't hear and all the things.
They weren't even, for the most part this year, they didn't even play Renegade, at home games.
Who cared? Nobody there.
Like, who are you there to fire up? What are you doing it for?
Yeah, that's crazy. I'm sure we're, again, I can't wait to see the 30 for 30 for this year in NFL. So many things I think will come.
We were kind of chatting about that today on a Zoom call. We were waiting for the head. We're all sitting in the lobby of the, in the Zoom lobby. Yeah, yeah. We're all over the place, right? And somebody said something about something that happened on a Zoom call earlier this year, and I said, "Yeah, you can put that in the movie as the
right, the documentary, or right,
part of the movie is you know how these Zoom calls went across the league. Guys, people struggled with them. Sometimes things slipped through that maybe shouldn't have slipped through.
Technical errors. I'm sure there's a lot of that too. In fact, we were talking
about it because Zoom sent out an update to the, and they've done this several times now over the course of the year. I see this because we're on Zoom a lot. In this last one, I'm like, I'm not downloading that at this point.
Like, things have gone well so far.
This one's working just fine, unless I absolutely have to. I'm not dealing with a new Zoom at this point.
How many times have I updated my iPhone, and then the next day I'm like, I hate this.
Yeah, where's this, where's this thing at? I can't find it. I know where everything's at now on these Zooms. I'm not messing with it until after the season's over. Then I'll upgrade it and hopefully never have to use it again.
And be done, hopefully, yeah. I'm sure all you guys are super ready to get back to normalcy in terms of just the way you cover the team, but... All in all, I mean, I think the team's in a good spot going back to the practice report.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, you know, Matt Filer and Robert Spillane getting back out on the practice field today. David DeCastro said that Filer was back out there with the starting unit. So,
I had mentioned that yesterday. I was wondering, is it Dotson's job? But Filer's earned it. You know, I mean, he's been around the block, and maybe it'll, I would imagine Dotson will be the left guard next year. But, you know, I think that makes sense. And that the Steelers are very loyal to their veteran offensive linemen, too.
I mean, you could say, well, you know, Dotson's played really well, but it's been over the course of three or four games. Let's not get, you know, that doesn't equate to a guy who's played, you know, 70 career games and has been in the organization for 6 years and knows, you know, when you know, we hear it all the time when we bring on the old offensive lineman on. I could just grunt and
Wolfenton said the
communication.
Time. Yeah, you know. Of course, right. And continuity and communication on the offensive line is unbelievably important. And this team's had a remarkable stretch. I mean, going back, you know, they've had a little bit of turnover lately, but there was a stretch there. They didn't lose starters for years after years, and that pays off in a big way.
I mean, and even the guys who've stepped in for some of those starters, Filer, Chukwuma Okorafor, they're guys that have been with the team for several years.
They've been that offensive.
They're not drafting a guy and just plugging him in and saying, "Okay, Rook, have at it."
Yeah, there is.
That's kind of where Dotson's been at this year. And that's tough.
And that sets up well for Dotson next year,
right?
You know, great. I mean, he went through the ropes, and they did get a little thin on the O line this year more than they've been. You know, they were lucky over some of those years too. But yeah, that's interesting. I mean, and we mentioned it yesterday, too. Like, I'm a little intrigued by what the six offensive line sets they could put out there. And they could trot Dotson back out there, and he's obviously going to have a helmet, and he's going to be ready to play. He doesn't have to line up a tight end, and he's not, you know, he can still line up at a guard position and just bump everybody out one.
Yeah, so, you know, they have some options now. You know, the same thing with getting Spillane back.
That
improves your depth there as well.
Do you think the three of them play sort of equal snaps? Do you think Spillane's more passing down situations?
I think if you're going to go with Spillane back in the starting lineup, you just go with Spillane in the starting lineup.
And Williams.
Yeah.
And they're your top two, and Williams.
Because, again, they're the guys who have been in your system the longest.
Right.
So if you have to make adjustments on the fly, you know, you're not looking at Avery Williamson and saying, okay, you understand what we're doing now. Yeah, you got this?
Yeah. I think you mentioned this on Monday, but I know there was no injury to Vince Williams, but it sure seemed to me that Vince Williams and Hilton were pulled for in the second half, basically.
Well, Vince Williams was on the injury report today with a quad. Now, he did get hurt in the second half of that game. He kind of limped off.
Okay.
But
I mean, he's playing.
I think Hilton.
Hilton. They're saving him up a little bit.
He got hurt the last time he played the Browns, trying to tackle Kareem Hunt.
Sure.
You know, you got to kind of save him from himself in that situation.
It brings me to another topic.
And the Browns aren't a big three-receiver team anyways.
No, they're not, and it's a good point. I'm not making an excuse for him as a bad play by Minka on the long chub run, but I found it interesting, and I thought about it after the fact, that he played a lot of snaps in that game, Minka.
Yeah.
As a deep center fielder, stay away from everyone. My hunch is, I'm sure Tomlin didn't say, hey, let him run for a touchdown and be ugly trying to
tackle him. But let's be careful out there.
Let's make some business decisions while we're out there. And maybe he would have attacked Chubb with a little more vigor if it was this Sunday as opposed to last. You know,
I don't think there's any doubt because That was more of a, hey, I'm just going to try to slow him up and drag him down kind
of
tackle.
Maybe out of bounds.
As opposed to, yeah, just driving him out of bounds on that, because he would have had him lined up.
I would think. And Chubb's a great player. I mean, maybe he would still run for a touchdown today, but I just wanted to throw that out there.
No, I thought the same thing when it happened, and people were killing Mink. Well, nice tackle attempt, Mink. I'm like, do you really want Mink Fitzpatrick laying it on the line here in week 17?
Throwing his shoulder into Chubb.
Yeah.
And then
next thing you know, he's sitting on the sidelines. Oh, he's got a stinger, or he's got a separated shoulder. Is that what you want?
I mean, I think he played a lot of snaps just because of the position he plays.
Stay
away from a lot of other bodies.
The communicator in the secondary and, you know, that kind of stuff.
People aren't going to fall on your ankles from behind, or lineman-type injuries and that type of thing too, so not a lot of contact. So yeah, they're in a good spot. Brownies aren't.
The Brownies are not. And then Monday night had left tackle Tristan Wirfs and wide receiver Rashard Higgins got caught drag racing.
Oh, I didn't hear that one.
Oh, you didn't hear that one?
Nice.
No, they got citations for drag racing in Westlake, which is about 10 miles to the west of the city. One of the two, and it didn't specify who, had a marijuana cigarette in his ashtray or in his possession. Just what you want your guys doing.
Yeah, so
it's
the
week
of a distraction
playoff
with
game.
Young guys. You know, right? That seems like the distractions you hear every other most years. Like, they probably were in their own cars. I don't care about the COVID situation. It's just doing dumb young things. You know, at a time when
at 9:30 in the morning they got pulled over.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Probably on their way to the team facility. Hey, let's have some.
Yeah,
I would guess
on
their way to the team facility. Like, there's no traffic at 9:30. Let's just run.
Everybody's home. Let's race.
What
race
are you
there.
Doing?
Yeah, Rashard,
that's just stupid.
Just
things you don't need.
No, one more distraction, one more thing to come up.
I think the Steelers are going to roll these guys.
I do too. I'm keeping my fingers crossed that, obviously the Steelers played this team. That team has some COVID issues. I'm just hoping there's not a Friday positive test from the Steelers or something like that.
I don't want to see any positive tests on either side.
Of course.
Just let's get through that.
I mean, if these teams were 100% and there was no COVID situation, I'd still pick the Steelers big. I just think that's the Browns achieved their goal. And
I agree.
You know what I mean?
I also, as I mentioned to you before the show started, did a little research and found that first-time quarterbacks since 2002, first-time quarterbacks in the playoffs are 9-30.
Yeah,
that's 9-30.
Right,
that's less than 25%.
Yeah, I think that's really
or just
telling.
Over 25%, I should say.
And we had a good conversation before. We should have recorded it. And that includes, with all respect to Mayfield, he's the first overall pick. I mean, he has some ability, but some of those nine are the superstars, the Mahomes.
Aaron Rodgers didn't win his first playoff game.
Right,
it's just like
a lot better players than Mayfield.
On a lot better teams.
Right.
That's the other part of it. I mean,
if
you look
defenses.
At it, and we went through that yesterday, Ben and Russell Wilson and Tom Brady won their first playoff game, but they weren't great in those games, and they were 3-point victories, but they had great defenses they could fall back on.
They were complimentary pieces at that young stage.
Could afford for your quarterback to go out there and throw for 180 yards and one touchdown with two interceptions.
See, and I think that's who Baker is, period.
Yeah.
And always will be.
He's now started 5 games against the Steelers and never had a 200-yard game. Never thrown for 200 yards.
Yeah, I mean,
200 yards in these days is pretty – that's not many.
Right. I mean, I think he's very system-oriented and will always be that Kirk Cousins tier. You know, have some big games and have some good moments, but play action, strong run game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they better build a defense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
To me, that's not – and I get it. The number one pick is worth whoever that guy is that year.
Right.
You don't get to pick, I want Andrew Luck in this year. That's
sure.
That's the way it works.
Right.
Yeah.
But he wasn't the slam dunk.
No, he was not
the
slam
dunk.
Five
quarterback draft class.
I mean, if they redraft the 2017 draft, obviously Mahomes is number one. He didn't go number one.
Sure, sure. Watson would have went higher than Trubisky.
Absolutely,
yeah. Right. I heard one thing today I found interesting about that Mayfield class is if you asked consensus – who do you want after their rookie year? I think most people would have said Mayfield. I mean, he had that hot streak. He won rookie of the year. I never quite bought into that, but I'm just talking about most people. After their second year, everybody would have said Lamar. He was the MVP.
Yeah. Now they would say Allen.
Now they'd say Allen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, young quarterbacks change pretty quick around here.
It absolutely does. Yep. And, you know,
Darnolds and Wentz, aren't written yet.
If you think back to that class, that rookie class, people were talking about that when it was drafted. Oh, this is as good as the 83 draft or the 2004 draft. It's not.
It's not. I mean, it's not going to have three Hall of Famers.
Right.
I mean, chances are maybe they'll have two.
Maybe they'll have two.
Rosen's almost out of football.
Yeah. I mean, he's on his, fourth team?
Fourth team. He got picked off
and he was the 10th overall pick in that draft?
Yeah, right.
I mean, drafting quarterbacks is a crapshoot. And I want to talk – Ben Roethlisberger said today that he absolutely believes that Mason Rudolph will be a starting quarterback in the NFL. He believed that before Sunday's game. I want to talk to our next guest, Bob Labriola, about his thoughts on Mason Rudolph's day and what he thinks of that. So we'll do that next. He is Matt Williamson. I'm Dale Lally. You're listening to The Drive here on Steelers Nation Radio. That's brought to you by Ford and FedEx here during the playoffs. We'll be back right after this.
You're tuned to The Drive on your 24/7 home of the black and gold, Steelers Nation Radio.
Welcome back to The Drive. I'm Dale Lally here with Matt Williamson, and we're joined now by Bob Labriola. Our guests are brought to us throughout the playoffs here by Ford. We appreciate you stopping by, Labs, as you always do on Wednesdays. And Ben Roethlisberger said today that Mason Rudolph showed him what he's known all along, that Mason Rudolph will be a starting quarterback in the NFL somewhere. What did he show you Sunday?
Well, I'll tell you what. Firmly believe that what Mason Rudolph did was justify the Steelers' leadership, and by that I'm referring to Art Rooney II, Kevin Colbert, and Mike Tomlin. Their level of comfort in him, you know, serving as the number two quarterback behind Ben Roethlisberger this season, and I don't see any realistic way that changes in 2021, because Mason Rudolph is still on his rookie contract next year. His cap number's something like $1.25 million, which, you know, in quarterback money is peanuts. And, you know, he did what he had to do. I thought he played good enough to win. They didn't. The interception was a poor decision on his part, but you know, your good pal Gene Steratore said that roughing the passer should have been called for a blow to the head on that play, and replays did show that. And me personally, I thought that there was pass interference on the 2-point conversion. Not that I was rooting for overtime. Let me tell you that.
Yeah, as they were going for that, I said, "This is just what we need: overtime in this game."
Yeah.
Right. Well, it's like a preseason overtime, which is just...
That was even worse than a preseason overtime because, you know, the Steelers are just trying to get out of that game without getting anybody hurt. Preseason game, if somebody gets hurt, it's, you know, okay, at that point in the game, it's usually somebody who's not going to make your team anyways.
They're not going to miss them that bad.
But the last thing you wanted was somebody that you might need in a playoff game getting hurt in overtime in a Week 17 game that you didn't care if you won or not.
But, you know, the other thing that he did, Mason Rudolph did, that, you know, I thought was impressive was the Steelers had five passing plays of 25-plus yards in the game. He threw all of the passes. There were some things from the offense, you know, that I saw that I liked. And he was responsible for them for the most part. He's not Ben. He's not going to be Ben. But, again, I think that when, you know, when everybody gets their head around the fact that he's the backup, and as the backup, he's not expected to be as good as the starter, because if he was as good as the starter, he wouldn't be the backup.
I mean, now you're talking logic,
wow.
Bob. Come on.
That makes too
much You're talking
sense.
Too much logic here. What he did was he saved you in the offseason asked and answered.
From
having to answer any questions about whether the Steelers need to sign a veteran backup quarterback.
Seriously? I'll tell you what. That since this is sponsored by Ford, I'll bet you that F-150 that I'm supposed to get for all these appearances, double or nothing on that, that I'm getting those questions. I'll say the first asked and answered after whenever the season ends. Because, hey, Dwayne Haskins is out there.
Sure, I mean, Cam Newton will be out there. They'll go.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Carson Wentz you're going to trade for. Sam Darnold you're going to trade for. And then, you know, moving up in the first round of the draft to pick that kid from BYU.
All of them. You're going to just go do all of those things.
Why don't they do all of them?
Absolutely. Right. You can never have too many quarterbacks. Because, as we all know, this is fantasy football or a video game. So, 6-7 quarterbacks on the roster is...
And active, because you got to have them active.
Right, in case you want to you know, run a gadget.
Run a gadget play. That's what I wanted to get to next with here, Bob. And I know your feelings on this because they're the same as mine. You know, the gadget stuff, when you're running it with Mason Rudolph on the field, is one thing.
The Dobbs stuff you're talking about.
The Dobbs stuff. Yeah. But to take Ben Roethlisberger off the field to run Josh Dobbs out there is a win for the defense. It's a win for the defense when the Saints do it with Taysom Hill. It's a win if the Steelers would happen to do it with Josh Dobbs.
You don't snap at the Breeze or Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, but you beat me to it. It's Sean Payton-esque. Take your Hall of Fame quarterback off the field to put in somebody who is so one-dimensional that everybody knows what he's going to do. I like Josh Dobbs. You know,
I do too.
Okay. But
they could have used him last year.
His weakness, absolutely.
Right.
His weakness is, the short intermediate, high accuracy necessary throws, that kind of stuff. He's not bad intermediate or deeper when he gets a clean look as he did what it was in 2018 against the Ravens when, Ben was hurt, I think. You remember that play?
Yeah.
I don't remember what year it was.
It was against the Ravens. It was a third down play, I believe.
In Baltimore.
Out of his own end zone.
Or maybe it was a second down play.
But it was a throw out of his own end zone.
Right. Everybody thought he was going to run.
Right.
It was going to be a running play. He can do that. But, I mean, asking him to, sift through all the trash and pick out the guy on the slant and deliver it quickly and accurately. That's not his forte, and so asking him to do that, it's not fair. You're setting him up to fail. Somebody asked me in an asked and answered, 4th-and-1, game on the line, what do you call? And my answer was, I put the ball in the hands of my best player,
and let him decide.
An RPO.
Yeah.
No, seriously, call an RPO, let him look it over, and decide.
And if I'm running the ball there, I want James Conner in the game.
Well, what I mean. But you hand it off to a running back based on what you see, or he looks it over and decides that that's not the play, if that's what he decides, and then he, throws it to the open man, like he did late in the Eagles game to Chase Claypool, and it went for a touchdown. So that's my offense, and I think if in those situations, and I think if you would go, to any defensive coordinator of any team in these playoffs and give them sodium pentothal to make them tell the truth, that's what they fear more than a gadget play.
Oh, yeah, without question.
They would love to have Ben on the sideline.
Right, yeah. I mean,
and run a read option.
Yeah, I think about that a lot. Like, what does the defense want to see? Oh, we'd love to see Gentry and Samuels in the game. Of course. Labs, I'll never forget. There was a couple summers ago, we were up at Latrobe. You joined Dale and I, and that was the summer where the Browns were favored to win the AFC North. They had just traded for Odell, and, get your money in now because this is going to be a dynasty. And I remember you sitting with us going, let's see how expectations treat this team. Let's see when you have to play on Monday night, travel home at 4 a.m, and get ready to come to Pittsburgh the next week. You really laid it out well. And the Browns have come a long way. I mean, they're a deserved playoff team. But Dale and I have been talking all week that I kind of feel like their Super Bowl happened last Sunday.
Oh, yeah. And the other thing that I really believe is a shock to the system of a team like that is dealing with success.
Right.
Because, you know, how do you handle, like, and I don't know, and I'm not saying that, you know, they're, but what's their concentration level when they came back after making the playoffs for the first time in 18 years? I mean, I just can't believe that there is no, because it's natural human reaction. Ah, we made it.
They got T-shirts made, playoff T-shirts.
Well, there you go. And, you know, before we came on the air, Dale, I told you, and this is true. You know, it sounds like I'm just saying this to make fun of the Browns, but this is true. Within the Browns organization, they have something called the Happiness Committee. And the Happiness Committee has its own, like, I don't know if they have a Twitter handle, but they have their own email address, you know, within the Browns, you know, team, you know, email system. And these are people who, you know, they hang balloons and in the office and streamers.
They're the Dunder Mifflin Party Committee.
Well, yeah. And, I mean, it's like, you know, keeping morale up or whatever. But, you know, it just blows. It blows my mind. I mean,
they come out and they put the little hearts and stuff around everybody's lockers in the locker room like you did in high school. You know,
right on their locker. Right.
Little you picture. Know, yeah, I mean, good luck in the playoffs.
Labs, you're not in charge of the Happiness Committee on the South Side.
You talk to me enough, Matt, to know that we're not a committee.
You'd be perfect for that job.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like the spirit committee in high school. You know, you paint the signs and, you know, spirit, who's got it, you know, all that kind of stuff, setting up pep rallies. And but I mean, that's, you know, and when you approach an NFL season like that, I mean, you know, the next team is waiting to rip your head off when you start winning. And, you know, the Browns, they're not going to sneak up on anybody anymore. I mean, they're not going to sneak up on the Steelers on Sunday night. And if, you know, there are more games this year for them, it's going to get worse every time. And next year, you know, whoever has them opening weekend is not going to think, oh, the Browns are slappy. You know, we're 1-0. No, they're thinking, how are we going to rip Baker Mayfield's head off? There's a lot of things, you know, and taking it even to the Steelers, you know, 72, the Immaculate Reception, and, you know, everybody got all fired up about that. And, you know, don't forget, you know, Roy Blunt Jr. embedded with the Steelers, the author, for the 73 season to write a book about the Steelers based on their, you know, Cinderella Immaculate Reception year of 1972. And the book he ended up writing, the title of it was Three Bricks Shy of a Load, because they weren't ready to live up.
Yeah,
right.
Sure.
They're not ready.
Takes a year, right.
And a lot of times, it's not necessarily personnel or coaching; it's psychological.
To your point on that, Bob, this game being played Sunday night, I think really benefits the Steelers, because the Browns player, that, you know, Baker Mayfield is going to be sitting in a hotel room Saturday night. And then all day Sunday, bouncing off the walls. That's who he is, by all accounts. I mean, he's a high-strung kind of guy to begin with. You want him thinking about that game all day long and just thinking, okay. And then it gets in their heads.
Well, and the other thing that I, for me personally, the reason that I wanted this scenario was because, you know, and I'm not really criticizing them because, again, you haven't been in the playoffs for 18 years. You know, there has to be a little bit of relief slash, you know, celebration slash happiness associated with finally, you know, scaling that mountain.
That's
but
progress.
I'm sure that there was some talking on the field Sunday after they won. And again, I'm saying that that's normal human behavior. But if you're on the other end of that talking, you know, all of a sudden your little brother starts woofing in your face because, you know, you decided to play him one-on-one in your backyard on basketball left-handed. And, you know, he won by
squeaked one out.
two at the end by banking in a shot from the top of the key. You know, he's going to talk a little bit, and you get tired of hearing that real quick. So that's kind of what I'm hoping is at work here. You know, if it is, because I do think that the Steelers respond well to, you know, getting punched in the mouth, especially by, you know, someone or a team, some team that, you know, you don't really think should be doing the punching. And, you know, the Browns got to come here now. So, you know, again, I think that this sets up well for the Steelers. Now they just have to not squander this opportunity.
Bob, I dug up a stat yesterday. Since 2002, first-time quarterbacks in the playoffs are 9-30. Is there something to that other than just being 9-30, or is that real? Do quarterbacks need to learn how to win in the playoffs?
Oh, absolutely. Remember Ben's first playoff game?
Oh, yeah, it was ugly.
It was awful. Awful. It was awful. I mean, the Steelers ended up winning because the slappy kicker from the Jets missed. Doug Bryan, I think, was his name. 2004.
Correct, yes.
A couple. Maybe one at the end of the game and one in overtime or whatever it was. But, yeah, I mean, I think the enormity of the moment, you know, gets to the best of them. Yeah, and again, with the Steelers in 04, there were a lot of players on that team who were not playoff neophytes. You know, guys had been to playoffs, had played in championship games, lost, but still played in conference championship games, won divisions, you know, a lot of that stuff. But, you know, the first-timers, I think that you can expect a little bit of, I don't know, you know, the big eyes that kids get when, you know, they walk into Disney World the first time or whatever. And, you know, it's a little bit more of an issue when it's your quarterback because of, you know, his role on the offense, on the team. A lot of other guys are going to look to the quarterback for, I won't say guidance necessarily, but, you know, setting an emotional tone, calm when it's needed, you know, fire them up when it's needed. And, you know, I don't know, you know, what Baker Mayfield is going to have in those areas in his first playoff game. I don't think he knows what he's going to have in those areas in his first playoff game until he experiences it. Now, the one advantage Baker Mayfield has is, what's there going to be, 60 people in the stands? I mean, because imagine that place packed.
Right.
For a night game,
where
the crowd is well lubricated
against the Browns,
they have their voices
without, you know, a head coach.
Right,
that's kind of big too.
He's a guy I think who deserves so much credit for kind of smoothing a lot of the Browns' rough edges, because they had players, they had talent, but you know, just some of it. Slappy things that the Browns were known for. Kevin Stefanski.
You mean like a happiness committee?
Well, I'm talking about on the field. Slappy things the Browns were known for. He kind of, I won't say eliminated them all, but certainly limited them way, way, way below what we have come to expect from that team and that franchise. So he's not going to be there. I just wonder what kind of presence, if any, he can have that day. I mean, I don't know the specific rules.
I was reading on today. He's allowed to talk to the team via Zoom before the game in the locker room, but as soon as the game starts, he can't have any communication.
What about halftime?
Not allowed to have any communication once the game starts.
So he's watching on TV like everybody else.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're going to miss him. And it's not so much, I don't believe so much the play calling as it is the understanding or having a feel, you know, for the reality of the moments as they come up over the course of the game.
It's a lot more chaotic than people realize. The communication is very important.
Well, yeah, and I mean, again, and I've done this with people, and it was college game, Ohio State, Michigan. I was in a place, you know, and there was one group of fans from Ohio State rooting for them, one group of fans, Michigan rooting for them. It came down to the end. You know, do you go for, this was a few years ago, do you go for two and try to win it right then, or do you kick and play overtime? Who's going to make that decision? It's 40 seconds you got.
Yeah, right.
That's
right.
Not only do you have to make the decision, but
you got to come up with a play.
You, right. Well, personnel grouping, you know, all of that stuff. You know, TikTok, fellas, what do you got? And I don't think you would want to give the impression to your players that, you know, you're pulling something out of a hat and flipping a coin. So, yeah, there's as Matt said, it's very chaotic, and there's a lot of things involved that, you know, a clock is ticking, you know, and you have to make these decisions.
Player substitutions, and right, all that stuff.
Right. Challenges. You know, you might think, hey, this is, you know, I'm going to challenge this. I can win this. But maybe that's your last challenge, even if it's right.
Yeah.
You know,
is it worth the
yeah.
8 yards that you're going to get? You know,
right.
that kind of stuff.
You know, you get hosed on the first one. So the second one, you know you're going to get this one right, but now you're out of challenges. So, I mean, there's just a lot of things involved in a game that I believe that, you know, a team looks to its head coach for in terms of decision-making, you know, setting the course, you know, being the rock, you know, whatever. And they're certainly going to miss that. And the fact that, you know, it's the first time for the franchise in 18 years, you know, there's really nobody, I don't think, on that sideline you can turn to with enough experience who can, you know, step onto the bridge of the, you know, the Starship Enterprise and say, okay, I got it from here. So, again, I'm going to say this again. I hope the Steelers, you know, don't squander this opportunity.
Well, we're going to let you go, Bob. Our guest has been Bob Labriola. We appreciate your efforts here all the time, as we always do. Of course, Bob brought to us by Ford throughout the playoffs here. When he stops by on Wednesdays, he is Matt Williamson. I'm Dale Lally.
Labs, you're the best, man. Don't discredit that idea of spearheading the committee here for the Steelers.
I think that's an excellent idea.
You're the guy for that happiness committee.
Right.
Just don't rush that under the rug.
And the first thing I'm going to do, Matt, is appoint you my first deputy. You're going to be blowing up all the balloons.
I could be a jolly guy. Bring a keg.
Matt plans a great party, let me tell you. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back after this.
You're tuned to The Drive on your 24/7 home of the Black and Gold. Steelers Nation Radio.
We are back. I'm Dale Lally here with Matt Williamson, our ongoing coverage here on Steelers Nation Radio, brought to you by Ford and FedEx throughout the playoffs. And Matt, I got some numbers here for you.
Okay.
The Browns are 11-20 all time in playoff games.
Okay.
The Steelers are 36-25.
Okay, so that must be going back to the 50s and stuff, huh? And
that's since the Super Bowl era.
The Super Bowl era, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I suspect the Steelers being a lot more than the Browns.
That's a lot more.
I guess that's a lot more. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, you're talking. They've the Steelers have more playoff wins than the Browns have playoff games.
Appearances.
Yeah,
right.
That's. But here's the thing, the road teams have won 6 of the last 8 wild card games over the last 2 seasons. Since the 2017 playoffs, road teams are 8-4 in the wild card round.
That doesn't shock me though, because like Washington wins their division, but they're not
right,
in the top four
right.
teams. You know what I mean?
In 7 of the past 8 seasons, at least one road team has won a wild card game.
Okay. And I think it'll happen
we got two weekend. Teams that are favored this weekend. Baltimore is favored over
In Tennessee.
In Tennessee, which is crazy to me.
In Indianapolis, I'm sorry.
No, they're in Tennessee.
Right. They're in Tennessee, right.
They did play that game in Baltimore earlier this year.
And Tennessee won. Right, and they beat them in the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
Right.
And then Tampa is favored over Washington.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and I think that'll happen most years, especially with the seven playoff system. But there also is no fans either.
There's no fans, yeah.
You know, obviously, this year's different than others.
Now, there are fans in Nashville.
Full? Or, I mean,
it's not full, yeah, but there's some.
It's something substantial.
Then there's this stat. The Browns have not won in Pittsburgh since 2003.
Wow.
That was before Ben Roethlisberger joined the Steelers. So there's nobody on the Steelers roster, coaches, players, who's ever lost to the Browns at home.
I bet a quarter of our listeners don't even remember the Steelers pre-Ben.
Probably not. It's been so long.
Right.
They've lost to them twice since they came back into the NFL in 1999.
Here. That's crazy.
The one was, I'll never forget this game, because I was on the field when the Browns, it was, who was the kicker at the time? He was the old Browns kicker, Matt Stover.
Yeah, he was a good one, too.
Was it Matt Stover at the time or Phil Dawson? No, it was Phil Dawson at the time.
Field goal Phil was there and I was there.
It was Phil Dawson at the time. Kicked the Steelers had just thrashed the Browns in their season opener that year in 99.
One of those 49-0.
It was 41-0. They just destroyed them. And then the Browns came here in 99 and beat the Steelers 16-15 on a last-second Phil Dawson field goal. And I remember just looking. I was standing on the sidelines. I looked over at Bill Cowher as his expression as the ball went through the uprights.
A little shocked.
Didn't
see that one coming.
The Steelers then beat the Browns 36-33 in the playoffs in 2002. The next year, the Browns came here and beat the Steelers 33-13. That's the only other time that they've beaten the Steelers. Wow. In Pittsburgh.
That's remarkable.
Mike Tomlin's never lost to the Browns in Pittsburgh.
That's remarkable.
Ben Roethlisberger has never lost to the Browns here.
Wow. I mean, that rivals, that's not quite as crazy, as the Ben was the winningest quarterback in Brown Stadium up until this year.
Yeah.
Right. Like, holy smokes.
I mean, this is Patriots Bills type stuff.
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, just dominance over another team. And that stuff doesn't go away quick. I mean, I know there's a lot of new bodies there.
I mean, we talked about that last week of the regular season, why the Bills wanted to beat the Patriots so bad in that.
And they rubbed it in a little.
And they rubbed it in because they hadn't done it for. They hadn't won in Foxborough since Jim Kelly was a quarterback.
Same situation, right. And trust me, I mean, I tell the story all the time. I mean, it was the one year I was there, Phil Savage started every draft meeting with a prayer. And then he said, "All right, fellas, how do we beat the Steelers? And then let's talk about running backs." You know, and they probably, I mean, I don't know if they do that kind of stuff now, but it hasn't gone away. I mean, the little brother thing is real. You know, it certainly is real, like at the college levels. You know, if a college beats up on you year after year, like, I've been here 5 years and we were 0-5 against Oklahoma, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same thing, especially a team you face twice a year.
I mean, yeah, and there's a reason why we've seen so many Browns coaches fired after a Steeler game.
Loss.
You know, that happens all the time. But I think that,
even though they're young, I mean, they know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're going to be asked about that all week long. Well, you know, you guys haven't won Pittsburgh since 2003. And then you start thinking about it. We play them twice a year.
Yeah.
We play them every year and we don't win down there.
Yeah, and there's some people on that team going, "I was 4.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
Wow, maybe I wasn't paying attention then because I grew up in Washington or Florida or something.
I mean, even if you start looking at the guys from outside the organization who they brought in, how much success have they had in Pittsburgh?
Very little, I'm sure. And you mentioned this on Monday. Not a lot of playoff snaps between those guys, too.
I mean,
a couple of them,
I mean,
played games, but, I mean, they didn't play. They weren't prominent members of their old team. I mean, Jarvis Landry aside, and he's only played, what, one game? Like, they haven't played a lot of playoff football, and they're young. They never win here. I mean, a lot of things set up pretty well. And they, you know, nobody in the building today and no head coach.
No, I'll say this. None of that stuff matters once the ball's kicked off.
It doesn't, no.
But it does play in your psyche leading up to the game. And then if something goes wrong, then it matters.
Sure.
Like, oh, here we go again.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, then you start thinking about it. But it doesn't help you block Myles Garrett or get away from Denzel Ward or – you know, they don't drop interceptions that Ben should have thrown. You know?
Maybe they do, but
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, yeah,
it's real though.
It's definitely real, and you know, even times when they've been close, they find ways to lose. You know,
it had to be in their head Sunday, last Sunday.
Yeah.
I mean,
as that game got closer, as that game got, you know, they're in charge, in control of the football game.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the ball. It's fourth down and one. They're going to go for it. And Joel Bitonio, who's the longest tenured.
Right, right. Good player.
Good player, longest tenured Brown, false starts on fourth and one.
Right. I'm like, oh, I know what this feels like again. And it's in your head, to your point. You know, something's always going to go wrong. You know, one of these, I mean, you're not going to jump up on, and especially the Browns team, I mean, probably aren't going to jump up on a Steeler defense by 14 and put it in easy street and neutral and just cruise to a victory, most likely. I mean, that's not playoff football.
And even if they are up 14 because of their defense,
yeah,
they you just gave up 14 points to Mason Rudolph in the fourth quarter last week.
Look at each other and be like, I've been there. I understand this feeling, and I don't like it, and it's, and I don't have confidence. You know?
Yeah, that's what it is. It comes down to confidence.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that the Browns, even after winning that game last week, have a ton of confidence against this Steelers team. Like, oh, man.
And again, Baker may come out flying and, okay, you know, we got a ton of energy. We're young and exuberant and, you know, we're bouncing off the walls. But something's going to go bad.
But then when you get punched in the mouth, what's your, you know, it's like Mike Tyson. Everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
They don't pick up a twist or a stunt right. He gets drilled in the breastplate and looks over at the sideline. Coach Stefanski, how do we fix that? Oh.
He's not there.
Right, you know what I mean? Like, you need that whoopee, too.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. But I thought those are some interesting numbers there.
Yeah, they are. They're pretty telling.
The wild card teams do win some of these games.
Yeah.
But
they're often the better regular season team nowadays, though, too. You know?
Yeah, so you know. We'll see how this plays out. But he is Matt Williamson. I'm Dale Lally. You're listening to The Drive here on Steelers Nation Radio. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with the Fantasy Football Focus right after this.
This is The Drive with Dale Lally and Matt Williamson on your 24-7 home of the black and gold, SNR, Steelers Nation Radio.
By Ford and FedEx here throughout the playoffs. I'm Dale Lally here with Matt Williamson. And Matt, ESPN put together its fantasy wrap-up for the
that was good.
The season. And
the
first thing in here is that Aaron Rodgers was massively underrated in fantasy drafts. He was QB10 in an ADP of 93 this year. I got one that's even better than that because I got Josh Allen in the 13th round.
Wow, yeah.
It was like the 150th player that was taken. I took him after Carson Wentz.
Fantasy, I've always been the late-round quarterback, wait forever. I'm starting to change my tune a little bit. I mean, yes, you can hit that Allen or Rodgers, or the year before, that was Lamar.
Yeah.
It's like the best example I can ever remember. But you're really at a disadvantage if you don't have one. Like, there's five or six really good ones. And a couple, you know, like Lamar and Mahomes are going to be good next year. They might not be one. They might not be worth a second round.
They were overdrafted, though.
They
this
were
year.
Overdrafted. Yeah. There's a fine line. I might change my philosophy on when I take
that. That was my, I mean, because in my main league, for whatever reason this year, three quarterbacks went in the first round.
Yeah, that's insane.
That's insane. Yeah, it was Mahomes, Lamar, and Deshaun Watson.
Okay. And you don't have special quarterback rules. It's not.
No, it's what well, I mean. It's six pass. You know, 6 points for a touchdown pass.
Yeah, right,
which makes
right.
a difference.
Which is big, sure.
And those guys all run a little bit, at least to some degree.
Oh yeah, I mean,
but
they're the right
still,
ones to take.
I'm
course.
Not taking those guys in the first round.
Again, no.
I got Josh Allen in the 13th round. You telling me there's who had the better quarterback situation?
You by a ton, you know. But I picked the wrong guys, of course. But I left my draft. I had Wentz and I had Burrow. Wentz was a disaster. I started Burrow for most of the year. He got hurt. Then I end up with Cousins.
Yeah.
You know, like,
well, that's what you can't have happen.
Right.
Like,
if
your quarterback gets hurt, your main quarterback gets hurt, you're screwed no matter what.
Yeah. But I had a bad one to begin with. I mean, like, they were okay.
Yeah.
But I was at a disadvantage every week at the quarterback.
But Wentz was an issue this
Wentz
year.
Wentz was an issue. Right.
Yeah.
Of course.
So their second thing here is that Josh Allen became a fantasy star.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, as I was sitting, and I didn't love Josh Allen coming into the season,
but you knew he ran.
I knew he ran. He was somebody that I targeted. You know, in that taking Wentz in like the ninth round or something like
that.
Guys were, you know, the people were taking the Bradys and Roethlisbergers and guys of that nature. I'm like, I don't want those guys because they don't run.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, Allen's their short yardage back. I'm like, okay, I'll take him in the 13th round here.
I think the lesson to learn there is when you do take your backup quarterback, make him have a super high ceiling.
Yeah, it's got to be somebody with some upside.
Yeah, the Bradys and Bens of the world.
They don't.
The Ryans, it's not my bag, or even the Cousins of the world. Because if he hits, wow, then you get your situation.
Yeah. Dalvin Cook ran to another huge season.
Yeah,
I was drafting my fantasy year this year was so bad. In that league, I was drafting.
You're bitter. I don't blame you.
I was drafting ninth.
And you end up with Cook.
And Dalvin Cook falls into my lap.
Well, you got guys drafting quarterbacks, three of them in the first round.
I'm just going, oh, I can't believe it. Dalvin Cook's in ninth overall pick.
Right.
Just fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, he should have been four or five.
Yeah.
And looking
so
back.
So I end up, I have Josh Allen and Dalvin Cook.
Yeah, and didn't make playoff. Tough one.
That's a tough one. Yeah.
He's an awesome player, though. I mean, I have no reservations about him. He's certainly a blue chip type, top five type of guy next year, too.
Ezekiel Elliott took a major step backward.
He did. Are you buying him next year? Not the same price. I mean, there were five backs.
I'm not taking him in the top three or four picks.
I don't know if I'm taking him in round one.
But if I'm sitting there at the ninth pick.
Now I'm starting to get interested. End of round one, I'm starting to get interested.
If you know, seven or eight running backs go in front of me, okay, I'll take a shot on Zeke.
Because he's starting to look a little better at the end of the year, too. And Dak and Tyron Smith and Zach Martin. Like, I think people might undervalue him next year. He's not old.
They're not paying him a bunch of money to
run
Tony Pollard.
They know him better than anyone. If they thought they were breaking down a year ago, they wouldn't have paid him.
Right. Devontae Adams elevated his game to another level.
Yeah, he's clearly
the number one receiver.
Right.
I mean, that's not even.
I'm not sure who two is next.
Well, it might be the next guy. Stephon Diggs formed an immediate chemistry with Josh Allen.
Yeah, and that certainly helped Allen's cause too.
Yeah.
I mean, if somebody.
I mean, if you're sitting there in the ninth spot, and it's Devontae Adams, Stephon Diggs, and Ezekiel Elliott. Now I'm pondering
now
that a little
bit.
Now
I'm thinking about it. Right. I mean, Adams is a great, great player. I mean, not that Diggs isn't. I'm wondering, like, what lessons can we learn? Like, let's say, I don't want to say Darnold's on the same spot where Allen was a year ago, but some up and coming quarterback that has, you know, some promise but questions. Let's say they add Allen Robinson or someone like that.
We've talked a little bit about Drew Locke. I don't love Drew Locke.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not next year. Maybe it's 2 years from now.
Right.
But
he has a high
ceiling. And he's got weapons.
And he's aggressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they've put some pretty good guys around him. And he gets, like, Cortland Sutton comes back next year.
He played
all year without him.
Judy's in his second year.
Yeah.
Fant missed a lot of time this year.
I mean,
they
got weapons around him.
He could be that guy.
Travis Kelce posted one of the best tight end seasons ever.
I think he's the fantasy MVP.
Yeah.
Like, if we knew what we knew now and we had a draft, I'd take him at 1-1.
He was so much – well, their next thing here is that Darren Waller wasn't far behind Kelce. But Waller wasn't as consistent. Waller would have
every week.
He would have 12 catches 1 week
and
five the next. Whereas Kelce was just, okay, here's – pencil it in. You're getting 20-plus points out of Kelce every week.
Yeah, I mean, if you have Kelce and I don't, it's like you're playing with an extra starter.
Yeah.
I mean, that's hard to beat that team. And – I think Kittle will be in that lump too. I mean, I don't know if Kelce will ever match this year. Like I said, it was a historically great season. But boy, it's a big advantage taking a tight end early. And those three, I think, stand out next year. I mean, there's some good young ones. I always get caught up on the hot young tight end. You know, it could be Dallas Goddard or, you know, whoever. I mean,
yeah, Hockenson, somebody's going to be that guy.
But man, it's nice having the bird in the hand at that position.
Yeah. Their MVP this year was.
Might be Kelce.
Theirs was Josh Allen.
Okay. But, I mean, I hear you. But, I mean, you would have traded Josh Allen for Kelce.
I don't think I would have. Maybe right after the draft, yeah.
No, I mean, even when they were at their best.
I don't know that I would have because I didn't have a backup quarterback. It was any good because Carson Wentz bombed out.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying there.
I mean, there were. I considered it mid-season trading Josh Allen. Like, okay, I could do something here because my team was up and down. I just got off to a great start. Cook got hurt, and then that kind of derailed me a little bit. I'm like, I need to do something here, maybe. And I'm like, well, I could trade Josh Allen, but I'm not going to get anybody back because I'm not going to trade him for Mahomes. I'm not going to like that. Does me no good.
I'm just saying that the position scarcity is so much different.
Yeah. I mean, he had just monster weeks.
Monster weeks.
Their least valuable players. There's two votes here. Carson Wentz. This is at the quarterback position.
Oh, okay. We're just doing quarterback. Okay, yeah. I didn't realize that.
The quarterback position. Carson Wentz and Jared Goff.
Brutal. Yeah.
And if you were going to trade Josh Allen, you're going to get Jared Goff back and somebody else.
Receiver.
And that's just too big of a drop-off.
That's a big drop-off, right? Goff doesn't run either, especially if you have negative plays. Wentz has a lot of turnovers. Yeah.
If you're looking at next year, I don't know how they did this. It doesn't say here. I don't know if these are other least valuable players. It can't be because it's Kyler Murray, Patrick Mahomes. This must be some rankings for next year.
Okay.
Mahomes, Justin Herbert, Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson, Dak Prescott.
That's a nice group.
Yeah, and if you're looking at drafting next year, and you're talking about maybe drafting a quarterback earlier, well, maybe you can wait a little bit longer on Justin Herbert as opposed to some of those other guys.
Yeah. When I said I'm drafting, I didn't phrase that very well. You just listed a good group of quarterbacks that I think are unlikely to bust. Wentz and Goff weren't in that group a year ago. They were lower list. They were down the line. But if there's that group plus Watson, Mahomes, Lamar, maybe there's eight of them. I said there's five or six. There's probably eight of them that are every week starters. Click the button. Russell Wilson, I know he faded. But if you don't have one of those, you're a little bit in trouble. I'm not saying you need number one or use a first-round pick or a second-round pick. But I think you want to be in the tier two at least.
Yeah. And maybe you have to pull the trigger instead of waiting until round 9, maybe in round 6.
Yeah,
to get one of those guys.
I've always been the 9-10 and take two of them.
Yeah.
But maybe it's got to be round 5 or 6.
Because then you're looking, you could probably maybe throw Ryan Tannehill into that group as well.
Yeah, he's pretty consistent at this point too.
He's not maybe on the level of those guys, but he's not far off.
But he's an every week starter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe Burrow is too.
Perhaps. Maybe. Yeah, perhaps. But you may have to eat a few weeks with that.
Right.
That's the problem.
Scary, right.
The running backs, the MVP for, what is that, Cockcroft?
Tristan Cockcroft.
Tristan Cockcroft.
He's been there a long time.
His MVP at running back was James Robinson.
I guess if you consider the investment.
The investment was nil.
right.
Yeah. Of course, for Matt Bowen, it was Dalvin Cook.
Yeah. And he certainly lived up to it and more.
The least valuable players at the running back position. Ezekiel Elliott for Cockcroft and Todd Gurley Bowen.
Gurley might not play again.
I mean, we didn't like Gurley going into the season.
No, he never ended up on any of our teams.
His ADP was going in the second or third round. That was just. I mean, I would have taken Gurley in the fifth round and been okay. He's
maybe.
Right.
Yeah. But I mean, the guys that obviously killed you were use a first or second pick on McCaffrey or Barkley. You got zero out of either. I mean, that ruined your fantasy season potentially.
But Elliott wasn't much better. You took him in the top three.
Yeah, I would say those guys are even worse sometimes because you start him every week and you're married to him, basically, and he doesn't come through. And then
at least those guys were hurt. He was playing and not producing.
Yeah, that's
rough. That's a killer. Some of the top guys coming back next year. David Montgomery has played his way into that.
See, I don't think he'll be on my team.
He won't be on mine either, but...
He's going to top 20 picks overall, probably.
Derrick Henry, Alvin Kamara, Robinson. I don't know where you draft Robinson next year.
Robinson will be on my team either.
I don't think he will be on mine. Christian McCaffrey, Jonathan Taylor, J.K. Dobbins.
See, I want the young guys.
Yeah.
I want Swift, and I want Dobbins, and even Akers, and the up-and-comers that really showed it at the end, more so than Montgomery or Robinson. I know he's a rookie, but I just don't think there's a ton of ability there.
Yeah, and that usually kind of plays itself out. You don't typically see guys, look at this. He strings together 5 or 6 good seasons in a row, and he was undrafted.
Yeah.
It's a reason he was undrafted.
Rare.
Yeah.
And their offense will probably be better, and they'll probably add something else, but he's going to go high.
At the wide receiver position, the MVP, Stephon Diggs for Cockcroft, Devontae Adams for Bowen.
Yeah.
Hard to go wrong with either one of those guys.
I like Bowen a lot. I think he's a great analyst, but if you use a first-round pick on Cook and you use a top 15 pick on Adams, they're not as valuable as
right. You got Diggs at
you're more invested in
wide receiver 12.
Yeah, exactly. And he's wide receiver 2 when it ends.
Right.
You know, I mean, his price inflated. You know.
Tyreek Hill set a new career high with 17 touchdowns this season.
That was quiet. Like people didn't realize
quiet,
that.
Yeah.
Right.
Very quiet.
Is he your second receiver off the board next year? Like Michael Thomas, I don't think is in that equation right now.
No.
Especially Breeze retired.
In fact, Michael Thomas was both of their least valuable.
Yeah, he killed you if you drafted him high. Right. I think Adams is clearly one, but I might take Tyreek too.
Some of the other young guys they talk about: Hill, Justin Jefferson, DK.
Yeah, he's for real.
DK Metcalf.
Yeah.
AJ Brown. T. Higgins.
I'm in on T. Higgins.
Yeah.
That offense has a chance to be pretty good next year. I actually just did my Dynasty show last night, and we did a special on the Bengals. And I basically said, for their cost right now, I'm buying every Bengal. You know, I mean, they're not super expensive. Mixon, Boyd, especially Higgins, and Burrow. You know, that their stock's a little low right now, but I think their defense will be bad. He'll probably throw a lot again. You know?
Yeah.
Hopefully they add a lineman or two.
I want to see who the backup quarterback is going to be. It can't be what they messed around with this year because, again, Burrow may miss the first month of the season.
That might be a good – Flacco's not a good example, but some veteran type that's held down the fort might not be a bad move there.
The tight end position. Cockcroft's MVP, Darren Waller.
Because he's taking the approach. He's cheaper than Kelce.
He took him in the fifth round, and he got great production out of him. For Bowen is Travis Kelce.
Sure.
Okay. The least valuable player. For Cockcroft, it's Tyler Higbee.
Yeah, he went pretty high.
I mean, he was coming off a great second half.
He had five awesome games in a row to finish last year.
For Bowen, it's Zach Ertz.
I'd say Ertz is the one that would jump to mind for me. Yeah, he went. I think he was like the third tight end off the board.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, Kittle and Kelce, and then Ertz was three, and he might be done too.
Yeah. In his second season, T.J. Hockenson was eighth overall. Had 10 games with at least 10 PPR points.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy that caught 6 touchdowns this year. Could be jump into that.
Yeah.
You know, depending on what they do at with the coaching position.
And quarterback.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
They keep Stafford.
I think they probably do, but I mean, there's a lot of unknowns around them.
Yeah.
I loved them coming out, and I still do. I mean, I'm a big Hockenson believer.
Mike Gesicki.
I'm a believer in him, too.
Again, they just Chan Gailey stepped down as their offensive coordinator today. We'll see what they come back with. But Gesicki's and again, Hockenson and Gesicki could not be any more different
right.
at the tight end position. Hockenson is more like...
It's McDonald versus Ebron.
Yeah. Gesicki is more like Waller.
Very much so. Gesicki doesn't block anybody.
He doesn't block anybody.
He's a tall, skinny volleyball player.
He's a wide receiver.
He's a big wide receiver. He's a slot receiver. Yeah.
Yeah.
He absolutely is. And I think they will add a receiver. Like, it wouldn't shock me if they gave Tua Devonta Smith.
You know, somebody, yeah.
They're going to add somebody.
Absolutely. And the final guy here on the tight end list, Robert Tonyan.
Yeah.
He had 11 touchdowns this year.
Boy, you made fun of me for a while because I did not believe. And part of it is because I hadn't.
He had three of those touchdowns against you one week.
I remember. He beat me, right? But he's a former receiver, too. Like, I kind of brushed him off because I didn't know a whole lot about him. And after I did more homework, like, he's a big receiver too in terms of athleticism.
Yeah.
Not that he won't, but he'll block a little bit too, but he gets downfield and he can run.
Yeah, he's a tight end one going into next year.
I think so.
I mean, and maybe you don't, again, you're not drafting him in the fourth round.
No.
But
he's the eighth tight end off the board or ninth or something like
yeah.
that. You know, right.
I mean, he's in the mix. You'd much rather have him than Zach Ertz.
I mean, like I just mentioned Dallas Goedert, and I assume Ertz will be gone. I love Goedert. I've been a big fan of him, but Tonyan's more proven.
I want Tonyan over Goddard.
Yeah. Right.
I don't know what their offense is going to look like next year.
Exactly.
In Philadelphia.
How many are they going to throw?
I know Aaron Rodgers is still going to be throwing the football.
Exactly.
Against it's Green
Bay.
Going
to look the exact same.
You could make the argument that Tonyan's their number two receiver.
Yeah, absolutely. And they may add one.
Yeah.
You know,
but that's not a bad spot to be the number two
he
target.
He trusts him in the red zone.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Devontae Adams always has coverage rolled his way. I mean, he's only going to get better, too. I mean, young tight ends get better. You know, late in life a little bit too.
Yeah. Now, Matt, you drafted your team. We talked about it yesterday. The playoff team.
Yeah,
it's a little bit different
strategy.
Though. Yeah.
This one, you can only pick. You can pick whoever you want, but you can only pick a guy once throughout the playoffs. So you got to field four different teams, you know, week one all the way up to the Super Bowl.
So the key this week to me would be picking guys who are going to potentially lose.
Right. You know, like I'm hoping here's the team I picked off the top of my head. I picked Lamar with the thought that I'm going to use Mahomes, I'm going to use Rodgers, and some other quarterback that I think will be there for the Super Bowl. Like, you don't want to get stuck in the Super Bowl and you've already used Mahomes and Rodgers and they play each other and you don't get a quarterback.
Maybe you want to use Allen next week or Allen.
And Allen's the other one. I think I have three that I can use the next 3 weeks. So I used a good one this week. I used Henry and Taylor as my running backs, thinking they both will probably lose. And I think they'll both produce pretty well. I took Allen Robinson, same thought, and there could be a lot of garbage time there. I'm going to have to think who my other receiver was. I took Logan Thomas. Remember, we had the tight end shortage last week and figured he's maybe the second or third best one in the whole playoffs.
He's your number two receiver.
Yeah. Who was the defense I took? There was a couple really good defenses I liked. I'm going to try to save the Steelers.
Whose defense? I liked Seattle's defense this week against the Rams.
Because they might not even have Goff, too.
They might not have Goff, yeah.
It's funny because I put Seattle's defense in, and then I went back and changed it, and I'm trying to think. Oh, I took Tampa because they're playing Washington. I think that's the best one this week. And there's other good ones. I'm saving the Steelers. I'm saving the Ravens. I'm saving some other good ones, Saints, to hopefully use down the road. But I kind of played it for tomorrow more than this week. You know, some of those guys, I didn't pick Kamara. I mean, I saved a lot of studs.
You almost have to because you don't want to, you know, use all your bullets in the first round. And then you get to the
– Sure.
And you get upsets or those teams win and you're stuck. Well, now I got to take these – you got to make sure you're going to have guys down the road.
Yeah, I think there's like 50 people in this pool. And my thoughts were – I bet the top 10 will go heavy into this week. And then I don't, you know, so if I'm like at round 20 here, I'm fine. You know, I still got a lot of cards up my sleeve. So that's my strategy for it. I've never done one like that. So we'll see how it goes.
It'll be interesting.
Think of that other receiver is. Yeah. Think about that one.
We're going to take a break.
I took Diggs.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break. He is Matt Williamson. I'm Dale Lally. Our coverage here on Steelers Nation Radio throughout the playoffs brought to you by Ford and FedEx. When we come back, we're going to take a look and see if the Brownies, they didn't practice today. That's a bit of a problem.
That's a bit of an issue.
Bit of a problem.
I'm sorry.
Oh, there you go. See if they put out an injury report. We'll talk a little more about the game
right
after this.
You're tuned to The Drive on your 24/7 home of the Black and Gold Steelers Nation Radio.
We are back. I'm Dale Lally here with Matt Williamson. We're brought to you by Ford and our friends at FedEx, I should say.
Yeah.
That's what it means, I believe, FedExpress. the Browns injury report out for today. Offensive tackle Jack Conklin with a knee injury was limited.
Okay.
Offensive tackle Kendall Lamb with an illness was a full participant. He's coming back off the COVID list, I believe.
He's their third guy.
Yeah. Defensive end Myles Garrett with a shoulder issue was a full participant today, but he's dealing with something. Jarvis Landry with a hip injury, a full participant. He's been dealing with that all year.
Yeah, he has.
Wide receiver Donovan Peoples-Jones with a concussion did not practice. That's not a good sign
for him
because you want him to at least have been back on the practice field today.
Yeah. I think he was a seventh-round pick, but he was a five-star recruit at Michigan, superstar combine guy.
Yeah.
And he has, I mean, he's some big play
he's
ability.
He's made some plays, and he's their main return guy.
Yeah, right, that too.
Yeah.
But he's their deep threat, too. I mean, Landry's not going to really do that.
Yeah.
So that's a bit of a loss.
Defensive tackle Sheldon Richardson with a neck was limited.
Okay, I didn't realize there was anything wrong with him, but he's a quality player, too.
Cornerback MJ Stewart, who had the interception, was limited with a calf injury.
Okay. I mean, their cornerback situation is just, they need everybody they can get right now.
Absolutely. Guard Wyatt Teller with an ankle was limited.
Okay. I mean,
he was dealing with that one in the last week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cornerback Tavarier Thomas was with an abdomen. He was full. And then center J.C. Treader with a knee issue was limited. So, but pretty much three of their five offensive linemen
have something.
And one of the fourth guy is on the COVID list.
Right. That too. Yeah. Good point. If Antonio is not going to play.
Yeah.
Those limited guys, I'm sure they'll play. But, I mean, did they get to try it
really
out?
Really, their only starting lineman who practiced fully today was Wirfs.
Except they didn't practice, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he would have been the only one on the list. That's totally clear. It's not the best thing to deal with when, you know, you're playing the Steelers and Cam and Tuitt and Watt and all these guys.
Healthy and rested up and
right.
raring to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good line, but they're going to be tested. And Steelers gotten better than before.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting today. We talked to Cam Hayward, and he said throughout the course of the game, on Sunday, he and T.J. Watt were texting each other back and forth with little ideas about different things.
During the game? Oh, I guess, yeah, that makes sense.
Neither one of them were playing. Yeah, okay, I had to think about that, too, when he said it. I'm like, yeah.
Lean over and say, hey, T.J.,
But they're both sitting in their houses watching the games, mm-hmm. and they're texting stuff. Cam said he was taking notes.
Oh, I bet, right.
And he and T.J. were texting back and forth on.
This would be an interesting dynamic.
Yeah.
You know, right, like Ben's sitting there with his kids on his lap. Or
that's right. I actually asked Ben that, and we'll hear the interview in the next segment.
Right, right.
You know, what he did. He said he was watching the game from his house with his family.
Sure.
And his son kept questioning him, hey, why, Dad, why did they do this, or why did they do that?
Good.
He's like, I don't know, buddy. I'm not there.
Well, he's reading the safety and cover three. Maybe he's a prodigy. Who knows? Yeah, that's an interesting dynamic. I mean, hey, TJ, you would have whipped him on that play.
Right? Yeah. Oh, man. We
should have ran that.
Got to set that edge a little better there on that, or you know, those kind of things.
Boy, Heisman's coming along well. You know,
yeah.
It'd be an interesting – I'd love to see that conversation via text.
Yeah, so it should be interesting. Of course, again, with the Steelers, Chris Boswell was limited. Steven Nelson with a knee was limited. Mm-hmm. Terrell Edmonds back as a full participant, and then Tyson Alou with an ankle did not practice. Vince Williams with a quad did not practice. Those guys played a lot of snaps on Sunday.
Right.
You just take it easy on, like, hey, mm-hmm. we would have loved to have rested you in this game, but,
yeah, right, you know. Exactly. It's just impossible to do it, get everybody. If last week was a playoff game, do you think Boz would have played?
He was limited last week, so
there's something going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely think Edmonds would have played.
Okay, that was actually my next question.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and I think there's a little bit more faith now in Wright than there was. You know, if by
I don't love his kickoffs.
No, doesn't have a huge leg.
He doesn't have a big leg, but he put the ball through the. As Mike Tomlin said Tuesday, his main job is to put the ball through the uprights, and he did that.
Right, I know that. Yeah, I mean, that doesn't mean you trot him out there for the game winner if it's fourth and one. You'd probably
a 51-yard field goal. You're not going to try it, but he did make two 46-yarders.
And the kickoff thing's a big deal.
Absolutely,
I mean, if you don't have that if you don't have a driver in your bag and you need it, and hey, we want to kick this one out of the end zone. Because
you can't
run into
do it.
A dangerous return or whatever, they're going to get the ball in their hands.
Yeah, that to me, I mean, when people were asking about after the game, well, they could, you know, he's going to kick in the NFL next year somewhere. I'm like, not unless he gets stronger.
Right, that's a hard thing. I mean, if you go 16 games without being able to no touchbacks or very few.
Yeah, I mean, maybe in a dome you can get away with it, or in a warm weather city.
Right.
Yeah, but you're not getting away with that in the Northeast.
Right.
Or the Midwest, October comes and the ball's not flying quite as far.
Right, a good point. And it's not like Cordarrelle Patterson is unique. There's a lot of really good returners out there. But if you play the Bears and they have Cordarrelle Patterson, I don't want him returning the ball at all.
I don't want him getting the ball to five.
Right, absolutely. Like, that's a big detriment.
With a running start?
With
are you kidding
start,
me?
Right, absolutely. Like, it's vomit in
I mean, the Steelers special teams took a little bit of a hit in those. We talked about the Football Outsiders rankings.
Yes.
Because their starting field position in two of the last three games for the opposing team was not as good.
It wasn't as good.
They're getting the ball out at the 30, the 35, mm-hmm. because – and that's not on the coverage unit.
Not
that's on the guy
right.
kicking the ball.
Yeah,
he
absolutely.
Kicks a line drive that – you know, or kicks one – you know, when he does get one in high in the air, it comes down at the 10.
Yeah. Or he said like a line drive and it beats your coverage down there because no human's that fast.
There was a kick on Sunday where I made note of it where he kicked off and it was a line drive and it was deeper – you know, his first kickoff, it came down around to 10. Well, he kicked one, it came down around to 2, but it was a line drive.
No hang time.
And I looked, and the Steelers coverage guys were still at the 40.
Wow.
That's not good.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it shocked me when I was doing this for a living with teams how much a stopwatch is a special teams coach's
absolutely.
Best friend.
Absolutely.
I mean, on long snaps, on punts. Yeah.
How
I mean,
quick is it? How quick do you get rid of the ball? How long, much hang time do you get?
It's almost like running a 40, like a 4-4 versus a 4-2. I mean, it's a big, big
I mean, if, you're, if your hang time on your kickoffs is only like, you know, 1.8 seconds.
You can't run
the
that
fastest
fast.
40. Right. If you know, you could have
Usain Bolt suck in there. Right?
No.
Right. Speaking of coverage, I just want to throw this out there, too. It's probably a flash in the pan, but Ray Ray's bothered me a little bit lately.
Little bit, yeah, since the fumble against the Ravens, he's not been the same guy.
Right. I mean, you could kind of see why he's maybe bounced around the league a little bit. You know, and there's still a lot of ability there. I think he's been a good addition to the team, but
I think it's a confidence factor once you put one on the ground.
Going on there, and I don't really need to see him on offense anymore either.
I don't need to. No, I've not needed to see that for a long, long time. Yeah.
Right. So but I don't know if he's guaranteed to be back next year.
Those guys are always, you're always looking. Mm-hmm. Anyways, he is Matt Williamson. I'm Dale Lally. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, we'll hear from Ben Roethlisberger.
Nice.
Our ongoing coverage here throughout the playoffs, brought to you by Ford and FedEx.
You're tuned to The Drive on your 24/7 home of the Black and Gold, Steelers Nation Radio.
We are back. This is the ongoing coverage here of the Steelers playoffs. We're brought to you by Ford and our friends at FedEx. And Matt, we talked to Ben Roethlisberger earlier today. He had a lot to say. Of course, didn't play last week against the Cleveland Browns, but watched the game.
Sure.
And
from home. Yeah,
right. He said he would have been a little different if he had known who the opponent was going to be, if he knew that they were going to play the Browns.
I guess that's a good point.
He didn't know. He didn't want to take notes on something that. You know,
sure.
Maybe don't play
the Browns pretty well.
Yeah.
At this point.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. But I wanted to get to what Roethlisberger had to say. So here's what Ben had to say with the assembled media earlier today.
1 second. First one, Dale Lally, go ahead.
Hey Ben, I was just wondering while you were sitting at home, watching the game. Did you find yourself taking mental notes? How did that work for you?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed watching the game. Not as much as playing in it, but it was, I sat at home, watched it with my family. I felt like my son asked me a question every single play, so I felt like I was really extra engaged in it. It was, you know, watching it with the knowledge that potentially we could play them again, right? But, not knowing what opponent it was going to be. I would have loved to have known early on that it was them, but I definitely watched it close.
1 second, we're in just the audio real quick. Okay, we'll get back on the questioning here.
We're going to have Bert sit here and see if you guys notice the difference.
All right, next question.
He didn't think it'd be funny like I did.
Next question, Mark Caboli, go ahead.
Hey, Ben, you haven't been to the playoffs a couple of years, haven't won one since I can't see them, I believe. When you go into this, do you ever think that, hey, this might be my last run at a championship? Do you ever think of something like that?
I mean, I think every player should approach this playoff game like it could be their last playoff game ever. We've used examples of players and coaches that have been in this league for a long time that have never been in the postseason, never been to a Super Bowl, whatever it may be. So I think it's prudent for every player to take that mindset and that approach. And I know I am, because nothing's guaranteed in this game or this world.
Brooke Pryor.
Yeah, Ben, kind of along those lines, that players only meeting that you had, I know that you emphasized it wasn't about the current state of the team, it was about preparing for this moment for the playoffs. How have you seen those young receivers respond, particularly that group that as a whole doesn't have a ton of playoff experience? And did they kind of take heed in what you were saying going into this week?
Well, I'd like to break some news here first, especially since you asked the question, Brooke. We had another one today, so I'm sure everyone will love that. I think guys did you know, took it to heart. I hope they did. I mean, that was the sole intention, was just to let guys know that, you know, it's like we do every year about this time, where if we're getting ready to get into the postseason or the last couple games of the season, just how important every game is, every play is, every rep in practice. And so I felt like today was another time that we could reemphasize that. and just let people know how special it really is. Half the teams in the NFL aren't playing this week. So it's just it's an honor to have the opportunity.
Jerry Dulac.
Hey, Ben. I'm just curious. Good morning. How significant do you think it is, or would it be, if you didn't have the guy who calls your offensive plays every game all season, and all of a sudden he's not there?
Well, good morning, Jerry. Hope you're not driving and FaceTiming.
I stopped.
Thank you. Be safe, please. I think it's a big deal. I would think so. I mean, there's something to be said about that kind of comfort blanket. There's something to be said about that guy that you have the relationship with that's calling the plays. I don't know up there how much their OC is involved in those kind of things. Some places their OC, quarterback coach, all those guys kind of do everything. And then the play caller, whoever it is, just kind of calls it in. So not sure exactly how they do it up there, but it would be a big deal not to have Coach Randy on game day in my ear.
Joe Rutter.
Yeah, Ben, last time you guys had a playoff game was here, 2017 at home. You were favored. Is that something you can – a trap that you can maybe avoid getting into this year, the fact that you're favored again playing at home?
Well, listen, you can say traps, this, that. It's the playoffs. There's no such thing as someone's favored, someone's not favored. I don't believe in all that. This is the postseason where every team wants it just as bad as the next team. It's interesting because is there really a home field advantage? I don't know. So it's just a different year altogether. You know, we have to go into it with a mindset that we need to play our best football and that we're going to get their best.
Jim Colony.
Yeah, Ben, obviously the Indianapolis game turned around quite a bit when you got Claypool involved, and then he was a big part of the offense last week as well. How important is it for you to get him involved early?
Well, it's important. It's important that we get everybody involved, though, early. You know, I mean, we've got a lot of playmakers. We've got a lot of guys that can do some special things for us. He definitely is one of them. So, in order for us to be successful as an offense, we need everybody to contribute early and often.
Didi Kinkabola.
Ben, Happy New Year. I asked you early in the season how throwing is different, how doing your job is different. And you said you have to use more of your body than you ever did before. Having a week's rest for your legs, how does that translate? Can you just like talk us through the process of throwing? And I'm sorry, I have to ask, what are the questions that your son asks you? Are they better than ours?
You guys are the best question askers I know. But happy New Year to you. He's very involved. But his question is like, why'd they call that? Why'd they throw it there? So there's a lot of just, I don't know, buddy. I'm sorry. But in terms of the rest and the time off, I feel it 100%. I mean, my legs feel a lot better. My knees feel fresher. I haven't thrown a football other than throwing in the house with them. I'm going to do more today as a Wednesday. Typically, obviously, is a kind of a day off. But today I'm going to do more than half of practice, I'm sure. Just to kind of get back into the groove of it. And so I've enjoyed these last couple of days to let my body, especially this time of year, kind of get back.
Will Graves.
Hey, Ben. Mike T yesterday mentioned that there are expanded protocols of available testing, et cetera, for players and their families. I'm curious, is your family taking advantage of that? Are you changing? You already mentioned some of the behaviors that you've changed this year just to kind of be safe. Are you doing anything extra beyond that for the playoffs?
Our house is so on lock. I mean, we go absolutely nowhere. My wife is crazy. The kids, she's teaching the kids. I mean, we are so above and beyond careful and those kind of things. And so it's a sacrifice that, I mean, all of us have had to sacrifice during this time. We all know that around the world, really. But I think the special kudos and love need to go to our family members, the ones that have sacrificed. I mean, the kids don't get to have normal birthday parties. They don't get to have normal Christmas, Thanksgiving, all those things. And for us as adults, we can kind of understand it. But for our kids, it's really hard to explain to your kids why they can't see grandma and grandpa and they can't, see their cousins and things like that. So it's been a tough, trying time for everybody. I keep telling my wife and the kids and my relatives that light at the end of the tunnel is getting bigger. It's been a tough time for everybody. We're all trying to make the most of it.
Ray Fittipaldo.
Hey, Ben, do you get a kick out of looking around at the playoffs and seeing Brady and Breeze, Rivers, yourself, and, you know, just the fact that all you guys are still playing at a high level and, you know, getting the job done?
All the old guys. I know you didn't want to use those words, but I'll say it for you. It is, it's cool. I mean, it's fun to be a part of it with them. You know, obviously if we were sitting at home and people were talking about the old guys that are still playing, why aren't you a part of it? Then you'd be disappointed. But to be a part of it, to be in this kind of tournament, as coach calls it, it's an honor, and it's a pleasure to be able to do it. And I'm hoping that it's not one and done. You know, we're going to give everything we have so that I can be the last old man standing, maybe.
Let's welcome Ed Bouchette. Go ahead.
Whoa.
Well, what? Ben, the change to a short passing game from the get-go this year was so dramatic after watching you all these years. What was the, why was that put in place, and when did you realize you probably had to get out of it a little bit?
Well, I think it was put in for multiple reasons. I think you've got, when you've got playmakers on the outside, you want to get in their hand quick. Sometimes it's a way to pick up the pace of an offense, right? You got, if you're not sending the ball 50, 60 yards downfield, guys can get back to the line of scrimmage faster. Obviously, the line doesn't have to protect quite as long. You can avoid blitzes when the ball is coming out. So there's a lot of different things and that you can attribute to why we've done it. And I don't think that we're going to get away from it. I just think that we know when the time is right, we got to take our shots down the field like we saw last week. But it doesn't mean we need to revamp our offense. What we've done is we've been successful. We've won a lot of football games this year doing it. And so we'll do it, but we'll also take our calculated risk down the field.
Jenna Harner.
Ben, you kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, but a lot of your young guys on offense haven't been on this stage before. What is your message? What are some of the other veterans kind of saying to these guys as you ramp up here this week?
Yeah, I was talking to Juju this morning, and I didn't realize the only time he's been in the playoffs was that Jaguar game, his rookie year. And so there's a lot of guys that don't understand what it's about. And I get it, because when I was a young guy and people tried to explain to me that, you know, take advantage of this and that, this, that, and the other, you're thinking, oh, I'm young, I'll get back. But it's not guaranteed. And so really, I think all the veteran guys, as we're winding down our careers, understand that we don't know what's next, if there's going to be a next for some guys. And so we want to make the most of this opportunity, and we just keep trying to tell those guys and emphasizing to them how important this time is.
Anthony Jaskolski.
Ben, you've been in 21 postseason games in your career, but this is even uncharted territory for you to be playing Sunday in a less than capacity crowd like Heinz Field, like the rest of the stadiums will be. As the playoffs go on, knowing that, is that an advantage? Is that a disadvantage that there isn't going to be a packed house, that there won't be that atmosphere?
I hate it for the fans, you know, because I think about what Heinz Field would be like Sunday night. Oh man, it would be, I mean, it just, anyone that's been there knows how special it would be. So I hate it for them. I hate it for the home, for the Steelers, and the energy and the excitement and all that it brings. But once again, that's what we're doing, and that's what we're living in. And that's why I wonder how much home field is going to play into it, which is the other question I brought to Coach Tomlin is, you know, in the competition committee, have they talked about that? Why some states are going to allow a lot more fans than others? Is that fair? Is it not fair? How does it make it equal? So it's a lot of unanswered questions, but that's what the year we're living in.
Time for a few more. Chris Adamski.
Ben, you said you were watching, you enjoyed watching Sunday's game. What did you think of Mason? And you, not now, not next year, maybe not even in Pittsburgh, but do you think Mason is a starting quarterback in the NFL somewhere at some point?
Yeah, I do. And I've felt that even before that game. You know, it didn't take him going out there and playing well for me to feel that way. I thought he played well. I thought he handled the pocket well. He made some great throws down the field, and gave us a real chance to win that football game. And so he's just showing kind of the rest of the world what we've already seen here.
Rook Pryor.
Yeah, Ben, I know it's been a while, but your first playoff game, what do you remember about the preparation for you going into it, your mental state? And were there any guys that maybe pulled you aside to get you ready the way that you've been trying to pass that on to the younger guys this year?
Yeah, we had a players only meeting and talked about, you know, a lot of those things. And so, you know, I just remember just kind of being a whirlwind, you know, telling myself, don't screw it up for these veterans, do everything you can to just to play good enough to help you win. And so You know, that's one of the messages I preach to these guys is no one has to be great. You just have to be good, because when we're all good, then we're great together.
Jim, can I clarify? Was that a players only meeting that you're talking about that you just had, or one that you had before your first playoff game?
Before the first playoff game.
Jim Colony.
Okay, now, Ben, when you were watching the game on Sunday, you saw Josh Dobbs come into the game on a couple of occasions. Mike Tomlin has not dismissed the possibility of him continuing maybe to make an appearance here or there in the playoff game. How would you feel about that?
Well, yeah, I thought Josh did a great job, too, with his handful of plays and kind of sacrificed his body on a couple of them, too. You know, took some shots and whatnot. So I think that's the cool part, is that no one knows who's going to start this game, the quarterback. We've got three options. So that's going to be the fun part. And I'm all for it. I literally will do whatever it takes to win this football game. And so you never know what you're going to see.
Final one, Jenna Lane.
Hey, Ben, I cover the Bucks for ESPN. I know that you've spent a lot of time with Bruce Arians off the field. Tom Brady really hasn't had that opportunity because of COVID and things like that. So my question for you is, what does he get to look forward to when those two finally do get to spend time together off the field? And I didn't know if maybe you had a favorite memory or memories with BA and his family that you'd like to share.
He's going to get to look forward to golf, a lot of laughs, and you know, other things that BA enjoys doing, having a couple drinks or two. But no, it's going to be it's really fun, because I've enjoyed being around BA on the golf course. One, because he's a good golfer and we match up well. But two, because he's been around football for so long, he's got so many stories. And I love going, like, digging into his past, like when he played quarterback. Those are some of my most fun stories, because I can kind of get him going and get him fired up about when he played quarterback and this, that, and the other. So he'll get a lot of stories and a lot of golf.
All right. Thank you.
That was Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger with the media earlier today. Lots of interesting stuff there from Ben, and he is ready and raring to go for this one. Rested up and said the knees feel great and the body feels great. And that's what you want. That's where you want him to be at, because early in the season, when everything was feeling really good, he was playing really good.
Yeah, I think the rest is going to do him an awful lot of good. And maybe it's not something we can just pinpoint, but I'm sure his lower body was a little rickety. And
says, you know, arthritis, you know, the pounding of sure. 15 NFL games on your 38-year-old knees that are really 58-year-old knees.
Right.
At this point in
beating
your
career, you know.
You know, think about, Joe Namath at the end was not pretty, but you can still win games.
Right, right.
And you don't have to Roethlisberger's nowhere near that bad.
No, but he's, you know, he lumbers.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah, but that's going to do it for our show today. We'll be back again tomorrow. We'd like to thank Bob Labriola for stopping by, as he always does on Wednesdays. Of course, for my partner, Matt Williamson, for Jacob here on site, I'm Dale Lally. We thank you for listening to this edition of The Drive on Steelers Nation Radio.